Matthew Canton, and you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show that is holding clandestine meetings with Bobby Petrino to gauge his interest in replacing me as co-host. The date is August 24th. In this special college football edition, we'll be previewing the SEC East with help from Orson Swindle, a Florida alum who co-writes Every Day Should Be Saturday, and Joel Hollingsworth, who writes View from Rocky Top, a Tennessee football blog. How's it going, guys?
Well.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start off real quickly here talking about the top 25 in general. Who's overrated, who's underrated, and who are the major surprises going to be this year?
Joel, go ahead.
Well, anybody who voted prior to Bomar getting booted probably has Oklahoma too high. Yeah, I think that really it's so hard to say with preseason polls. It's really not fair to criticize anybody, although I took a stab at it as a Mr. Numb Existence in the blog poll.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thanks. I hope Frank plays again. I sort of let him have it. He'll be doing all right. But if you got to pick one, I'd say Texas is going to have problems replacing Vince Young. Of course, that's no news to anybody, but I think they're going to have probably even more trouble than they might think. Like I said in one of my posts a little earlier this week, having a mobile quarterback is like an extra player on the field. If the play works, it works. If it doesn't work, then he can make something out of nothing. And having Young as your mobile quarterback is like having two extra players back there because he's like another running back, so he can make even more than something out of nothing. He makes something great out of nothing.
He was definitely a hoss.
He was. And you know, this year, Texas is going to have 11 guys on their offense instead of 13. So I think they're going to have problems. You know, but I don't know of anybody who's any better. Ohio State basically has the same problem on defense. So,
although a mobile quarterback can at times be twice the ways to make turnovers as well.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
so you true. can actually end up with 10 on the field. Or you can just end up running the Matt Jones offense if you really want, which is where you do nothing for three quarters. In the fourth quarter, you just get the big dude with the ball to run around and make something happen, which can be pretty spectacular, but it can also lose you games.
That dude was freaky. You know, it looked like he was like a turtle, but he was, you know, scooting by everybody.
Well, I guess it's my turn to go ahead and do our underrated, overrated, and et cetera.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Sure. The underrated teams that I've picked out, I think Virginia Tech does not get enough credit, perhaps because they've been so consistent, but also because of Jenkins, who is the mojo that really keeps Virginia Tech driving. In case you don't know, that's what we call the bit of pink skin, which is actually an alien life form clinging to Frank Beamer's neck. And at this point, all of your listeners are cringing and going, I can't believe he said that. But, you know... Everyone's.
That's why Orson uses a pseudonym. That's
yeah, exactly. Oh, among many other reasons, yes. But in all fairness to them, you know, they do the same thing every year. It's the same old two-step. They do special teams. They do defense. They run the hell out of the ball, and they ask their quarterback to boot and you know, throw 5 to 10 yard passes. They are five deep at wide receiver. They have their usual stable of fine running backs, and the defense is going to continue to do what they always do because they've got the same people there every year. They've got the same systems, and stability breeds success. So I think they're really underrated.
Well, year in and year out, it seems like Virginia Tech has some of the best special teams in the country, and they've got Beamer coaching them there, so yeah.
They do, and as far as overrated teams go, I think it's really hard not to say that Ohio State is overrated simply because, and this is idiot's math here, everyone's picking them number one, and they've lost 9 starters on defense. They are going to be good, but they're not going to have the same caliber of defense they had last year. They're going to have to win a few more games on points. Fortunately, they can do that, but they do play in the Big Ten, and getting through the Big Ten undefeated is rare, to say the least.
Even idiot's math is above me, though.
Well, we're actually just bluffing on the idiot's map.
Okay, I guess.
What about Notre Dame?
What about them?
Well, you know, everybody's picking them top 10. They think they're going to be a juggernaut. Charlie Weiss clearly came in his first year, did a bang-up job, but are they going to be able to sustain that momentum?
Well, Joel, you guys played them last year, correct?
Well, we tried.
You tried. Well, I mean, you, not counting the funk that was surrounding the year that shall not be spoken of. What did you think? You actually got to see them versus your team. So what do you think?
Well, they had a good quarterback who didn't turn into a Tennessee fainting goat under pressure. They had received.
That movie was great.
I thought that was hilarious. I don't know what, but they also had receivers that actually did more than just grow tall and run fast. They actually caught the ball. It looked to me like Weiss had scripted the first couple of drives, and they just killed us. So I think they're really, really good. And, you know, our defense was not bad last year. So I think their offense is really good. Now, our offense was bad last year, and we did score some points on them. So they've improved in that area. Then they are going to have problems, I think. I haven't looked at their schedule, so I don't know what they have coming up. But they might actually be able to take out USC this year. I don't know who else they got, though.
I think the teams that will present the most trouble for them are the teams that play in schemes which simplify the game and frustrate Charlie Weiss. Well, a lot of his play calling is based on read and react and on the tendencies displayed by the defense, both on film and in game once they start adjusting, right? He's always sort of trying to think two or three steps ahead of them. Teams that play this sort of cover two shell, really basic defense with a lot of pressure up front by the D-line and keep everyone in position really frustrate that offense. Michigan's defense took a lot of flack last year, but Michigan's defense also held them to, I think that game was 17-10, which 17 points for Notre Dame last year was pretty dismal. You know, 17 points for Florida or Tennessee in prime competition. Now, if that was, you know, high cotton,
yeah,
right, for either of our teams. Yeah, yep. But I think the teams that can stay basic against them get a lot of pressure and not play the sort of, you know, guess and react game that Charlie Weiss likes to play. Play calling wise, are going to stand a very good chance against them, and that's why I don't see them playing the national championship, because that is the game plan.
Excellent. All right. Well, moving right along to the SEC West, is anybody, and I guess I'm particularly asking about Alabama or Arkansas here, going to challenge Auburn and LSU for the SEC West title?
No.
All right. In theory, it could happen. In theory, it really could happen. And the team to do that, I have one crazy idea and one not so crazy idea. The one not so crazy idea is Arkansas. And this is betting on the notion that Houston Nutt is a talented coach who can do what Houston Nutt usually does, which is pull everything back from the brink of disaster. They have a new offensive coordinator. He's going to be playing it pretty vanilla. And Arkansas lost a lot of close games last year. And if you're a stat nick out there, if you're the sort of person who likes, you know, digging through the numbers and betting tendencies with some corrections and with an excellent defensive coordinator, Kim Herring has done a fantastic job out there, then it's foreseeable to imagine them taking those games and adding them to the win column. So if you're going to bet on a dark horse, you can bet on them. The other really crazy idea is that somehow the Orgeron catches fire at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss plays a kind of physical football on both sides of the ball that they've been doing on defense the past couple of years. Again, that's a really crazy idea, but you know, it's not completely unforeseeable.
Yeah, I actually had Arkansas as an underrated team, like you said, Orson. They got 19 returning starters. Mm-hmm. They got a pretty favorable schedule, and you know, I think they would have been underrated, and they could have challenged had they not lost their starting quarterback and not lost their running back's big toe.
And what about Brent Schaefer? He's only been on campus, what, 3 weeks or something like that?
You remember that, Matt? Remember the Matt Jones offense we were talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of that at Ole Miss for the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season.
Schaefer actually looks fast, though. I mean, that dude is fast. I think whether he's going to make a difference at Ole Miss really depends on whether he's going to be able to bring a baseball bat to campus. If he doesn't have a baseball bat, he'll probably do pretty well because he'll get to stay in the game. I mean, he's really fast. He's really shifty. Threw for something like 30,000 yards in junior college last year, and he's got the dreads now. So that's
a good sign because you know with the dreads, the wind resistance will get you with those. Essentially.
That's right.
But on a serious note, Dan Werner, the offensive coordinator from Miami, is coming into that system. And his system last year and in most of the years at Miami was a big pro-style simplified play-action scheme where they ran a lot of play-action passes. And they didn't really deal with mobile quarterbacks all that much. You know, when you think Brock Berlin, you don't think scrambler. Usually you think interception and low wonderlick score.
Or scrambled.
Yeah. He took
some, all over the back of the field.
Exactly. He took some hellacious hits when he was at Miami. In that scheme, I don't know if they're going to necessarily fit Brent Schaefer all that well, simply because of the sort of the obvious nature. I imagine what you'll probably see is a lot of shotgun sets, maybe a little bit of a read option thrown in there. But I'm concerned about their ability to customize that scheme to his talents.
All right, well, why don't we move along to our SEC East preview, the main event here. Who wants to talk about Kentucky? Didn't we say Orson was going to lead on that one?
Yeah, but I'll take all of the help I can get on Kentucky, because Kentucky needs help. I guess
the Randy Sanders, does that count?
Oh, we're talking about help. That man is a plague on points. An absolute plague. Although he's got some material to work with. I mean, he's got Andre Woodson. Andre Woodson is I think a pretty decent quarterback. I mean, he's no Omar Connor. Boy, isn't that an SEC joke? But he's a pretty decent quarterback. They've been running the same sets for a while. I don't know why they hired Randy Sanders as coach. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens at Kentucky. You just get hired. You're just here. Have a job. You just got fired somewhere else. Why don't you come work for us? It's magnificent.
It's almost like they're expecting to fire Rich Brooks at the end of the year so they can have someone just sitting there to fire.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's very hard to pin an exact rationale on what happens in Lexington for any reason, really. This says something really, really bad about Kentucky. Their last competent head coach, their last promising head coach, Guy Morris, left the program for Baylor. just wrap your gray matter around that. But I don't want to spend this time completely crapping on Kentucky the whole time. There are a few good things to say. They have a fantastic running back. I think he's going to be a real steal in the draft. I believe that's Raphael Little. Do I have
that
right?
Yeah, I believe so.
I'm looking at my notes here and attempting to read them. They ran him into the ground last year. Randy Sanders, if he doesn't succumb to his own genius, will probably lean on him this season, which could really cause some problems. They actually have a pretty deep lineup at Kentucky, so if they just, you know, if Randy Sanders just shuts up, doesn't do anything too rococo or frilly, and just pounds the ball, then, you know, they can keep that offense in pretty good shape on the field. Of course, that's Randy Sanders' big problem as a play caller. He tends to get fancy and let his inner genius show, and that's when Tennessee ends up losing games based on nothing but the game plan and not the execution of its players. Is that enough on Kentucky? I mentioned two players and insulted them a lot.
All I know is 8 days before football season, and the blogs are still talking about basketball.
So. Well, do we want to mention anything about the defense before we move on to Vanderbilt?
They're not going to have one?
Yeah, they were worst in the league in just about every major conceivable statistical category. I think they had like a 25-5 touchdown ratio or something like that, meaning their opponent scored 25 and they scored 5.
Yeah, they're still going to be woeful on defense across the board.
All right, so let's move along to Vanderbilt then.
Is this a step up or a step down from Kentucky?
Well, that's a good question. I guess that's what we're here to determine.
Go ahead.
I was just going to give you some basis. It's close to Brown's Diner in Hillsboro Road, which would make it a step up.
Okay. All right. Vanderbilt, big story, Jay Cutler's gone. That's really all you need to know. If you want to talk a little bit more, you can say that Steve Martin is back for his fifth year. probably not feeling quite so wild and crazy about this year's team as he did the last one, because, well, Jay Cutler is gone. They did, you know, they were ahead. They started the SEC 2-0 last year. They won over Arkansas. They beat Ole Miss, and they were actually leading the SEC East at that time, which is a pretty big deal.
Well, they had an offense that ended up ranked, what, like second in the SEC? And they had a receiver whose name is escaping me right now, who was pretty good.
Well, he escaped our defensive backs as well.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah. But,
that would be Earl Bennett, fabulous freshman Earl Bennett, who also ripped us up, but also did a dance, which cost them a shot at a two-point conversion at the end of regulation, if you'll remember that.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, it was scarcely a dance, though. It was more of a shimmy, really.
Well, shimmy. I don't know. Yeah, but speaking of Florida, I mean, didn't you guys have to go to double overtime to beat them last year?
Yeah, we had to go to overtime to beat them, and that is as much a testimony to Earl Bennett and Jay Cutler, just the sort of chemistry they had, because it really almost was just a two-man show. But they always play hard. I always give Vandy's not like Kentucky. Kentucky will just lay down and die. It's really rare for Vandy to go ahead and lay down and die. And Joel, you know that's true because you've seen them against Tennessee time and time again. They carry it close into the third. They'd usually drop it. That's not what happened this past year. But they always play Florida tough, especially in Vanderbilt, at home. Not that it's much of an advantage, but they always play him tough. So I will give Steve Martin that kind of credit. He is far from a jerk when it comes to motivating his players.
Yes. But, I think they're gonna have problems this year, of course, because Jay Cutler's gone.
Well, and the big loss on the defensive side is that they lose Moses Asefagi, who was an absolute monster. He falls in that tradition of great Vanderbilt linebackers, like Jamie Winborn. They're going to have to replace him, but I think they will. They just always come up with a pretty good defense and a woeful offense.
And he did have the most favorite name to mispronounce.
He did, yeah, because it's spelled Osemwedji, but it's actually pronounced Osefagi. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add before we move on to South Carolina?
Nope.
All right. Let's talk about South Carolina then. Are they going to have the talent to contend?
Yes, they will. They really will. Based on their real concern is at offensive line. They did lose some starters. Not that line performed all that well. And losing starters is always bad, but there's an upside to this. You're switching from a team that was primarily the Skip Holtz, Lou Holtz option running team, where, the idea of fancy was the quarterback draw out of the shotgun, and they're going to Spurrier's blocking scheme, which is definitely more pass blocking oriented. So the loss of the offensive starters there isn't quite so bad. Sidney Rice is just a mutant freak gazelle out there. He catches everything thrown to him. He breaks tackles. He flaunts double coverage. He's frightening. I don't know if you remember last year, but in the Florida game in South Carolina, Sidney Rice was double covered, won a jump ball, shook off a tackler. It looked like Madden on rookie out there. Terrell Owens. This year, people will take notice of him, but if you take something away from Spurrier, he will find another weapon because he's very good at featuring receivers when they're not considered in the defensive game plan. He likes, especially towards the end of the year, he likes to just roll someone out, feature them, and then, bust 150 to 200 receiving yards with somebody you've never heard of. So they're going to be, the problem will be getting him the ball. Blake Mitchell, I have a little doubt that Blake Mitchell is going to be productive because Spurrier has a superb record in taking bland, white, no-name quarterbacks and turning them, into trebuchets, just throwing the ball 50 to 60 yards downfield and scoring at will. Their run game is going to be pretty impressive, too. Corey Boyd is back, and you also have, Mike, the superb running back. They're going to run the ball a lot more. That's how they beat. That's how they beat Florida. That was one of the things that really helped them beat Tennessee. I think they have the talent. They've actually got to replace a lot of defensive talent, and that will be a concern.
Well, they had a little bit of trouble stopping the run last year, as I recall. Are they going to do any better this year?
I don't know. Like I said, they do have to replace some people. They gained a little bit of experience, but they lost their nose tackle. They lost two, and they lost actually four defensive ends. So it's good. Yeah. So that line requires some serious work. And that was a strength throughout the whole tear at South Carolina was the defense. So they've got a lot to replace there, and they have to replace Coe Simpson, who was one of my favorite defensive players of probably the last 3 or 4 years. He was phenomenal, a head cracker.
Hmm.
Well, Joel, anything else before we move on to your favorite team, Tennessee?
Actually, Orson, what are you thinking about the South Carolina-Florida game with Spurrier coming back to Ben Hill Griffin?
I think we're going to win. That probably doesn't surprise you. I guess there's two things, the strategic and the emotional side. It'll be hard watching him come back. I think it'll solidify a lot of things for Florida fans, seeing him wearing something else standing on the sidelines.
Yeah.
But I think they'll be, I'm sure message boards are asking, well, are we going to boo him? I don't know. You want to boo him? And then yeah, let's boo him. And someone boo him. And 2 pages later, you've got this horrible conversation that's wasting bandwidth on the internet, right? Just permutations of the same stupid phrases over and over again.
Yeah.
There's no different than our website, except we make fart jokes in between, and the fart jokes are really what make it. I think emotionally.
That's what I read.
Yeah, well, I'm great. That's the whole design. Nice to know that, little fly, you're falling into the web.
The farts suck you in.
Yeah, they always do. But on the strategic side, I think Florida at that point will match up pretty well against South Carolina, especially because we will be coming off of a brutal beginning to the season. I mean, we hit a point about 3 to 4 weeks in, starting with Tennessee, ramping up and going through the meat of the schedule. By the time we hit South Carolina, we'll either be so battle scarred as to treat this just like any other game, or so broken they'll pave us. I'm not really sure.
All right.
Well, moving along, Joel, Tennessee.
Tennessee. Well, of course, the big theme for this year is change. Last year we had that season of which we do not speak. 5-6, first loss to Vandy in 22 years, first losing season in 17, first year without a bowl in 16. And, when you start the season ranked number 3 and dreaming of the Rose Bowl, it's not a real good result.
A bitter pill to swallow.
Yes. So Randy Sanders fell on the sword, or maybe somebody pushed him onto it. I'm not quite sure yet.
Wouldn't that be a barbecue fork skewer?
It probably was, yes. Of course, the biggest problem was the quarterback play. So that's why they brought in David Cutcliffe. He's got the credentials. He's got 2 number 1 overall draft picks. Peyton and Eli Manning, and 1 number 3 overall draft pick, and he's Shuler. T. Martin was his national championship quarterback. And his job is to reanimate Eric Ainge. He started breaking him down right away, started building him back up. And he's doing that really with the whole offense, not just the quarterback. And he's changing a lot of little things that were wrong last year. Practice tempo, apparently they were not practicing at game speed. I don't know what they were doing.
I think the word is piddle farting.
Piddle farting, that's a good one. I like that. Apparently everybody on the practice squad was wearing green jerseys.
Nobody hits anybody. We just have one guy we throw in the middle and he gets hit.
It probably looked like
that was Eric Ainge, yeah.
It probably looked like a foosball table, a whole bunch of movement, but nobody really touching each other. Mm-hmm. We had a receiver rotation that was like, 9 guys deep. Our O-line was...
And not a one of them could catch.
No. I mean, we were just horrible on every little thing. So Cutcliffe is changing all of the little things. No green jerseys. We've had 2 all-live scrimmages, even with the quarterbacks this fall. Practice tempo, people are getting a tongue lashing if they walk from drill to drill or even walk the last 2 steps to a drill. First thing he did in the spring was tell his offensive line to lose weight. And I think that was probably both to make them lighter and to instill some discipline, because we lost so many games last year just because of false starts and just getting behind on a field position and everything. So he's doing all the little things. So far, fans are feeling, I think, a little bit optimistic after the first scrimmage when Ainge turned into that feigning goat again and almost threw an interception out of his end zone. Everybody started screaming for Crompton. But
you
Ainge,
can hear the howls everywhere after that.
Yeah, it was not good. And I think Cutcliffe played it right. I mean, he did not budge. Ainge is our guy. And even though Crompton's sort of closing the gap, he kept sort of poo-pooing him. And, you know, Ainge is the guy. And Ainge, you know, he did better in the second scrimmage. So, and if he doesn't bounce back, you know, Crompton's, I think he's almost there. So, you know, we got seven starters returning on offense. Jury's out on whether that's really a good thing. Our best starter coming back is Aaron Sears. He could have gone to the NFL. He can play just about any position. We got three really good running backs, I think. None of them practiced during the spring because they were all hurt, but I think they're really good. Arian Foster had a really good season last year after Gerald Riggs was hurt. He came in and he had five straight 100-plus yard games. He had almost 220 against Vanderbilt. Now everybody can say, you know, those were Olay defenses, and that's probably true. But if you look at the Alabama tape, he played pretty well against them too, and they're pretty good on defense.
Yeah, how can you not start him? He's phenomenal, Joel.
He is. He, you know, and he's sort of like a Matt Jones kind of guy. He sort of glides. He doesn't look as fast as he probably is. He just had a good nose for the game. But even better,
he's kind of like a Bentley in a demolition derby. Like, it just looks like he's gliding through. But if he hits someone, it's going to leave a dent. I mean, he's a hard hitter when he has to be.
Yeah, he's good. We're excited about him. Behind him in rotation is Montario Hardesty, who was actually ahead of Foster last year until he tore his ACL. And apparently he's recovering quite nicely now from that. He's still got a little bit of swelling or something, but apparently he's doing pretty well. And then also in the rotation is LaMarcus Coker, who was a really highly touted guy from the state of Tennessee. He's a speedy, shifty little dude. So we're excited about those guys, wide receivers. Jury's still out on them three years later. But we're hoping Trooper Taylor's going to sort of turn them around like he did with the running backs. And I think we're going to be okay. And he's made them catch 100 projectiles a day every day over the summer. And I say projectiles because
he was throwing bricks at him.
I was going to say, any word on what that means?
Yeah.
Well, if you're throwing bricks to the receivers, I would teach them to catch with their hands and not to drop the thing. So, you know, that'd be tough. With all the focus on the offensive and everything, nobody's really talking about the defense, and that was really sort of a big story going in. We had 6 of 7 starters on the defensive front to replace. Most of those that were replaced are in the NFL. But I think we're okay because we don't have to replace John Chavis. And he always has good players. He always has them ready to go. And he's always managing expectations with his players. Seems to be better than the offense does.
Yeah, they definitely seem a lot more consistent than the offensive ball, particularly the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Well, you think Tennessee is going to have a shot at Cal in the opener?
I do. I think there's it's going to be tough. The way I got it sort of scheduled out, and we can get to this when we get to the previews, but I think they could win or lose against California, Florida, and Georgia. So
okay.
They got a shot.
Interesting. All right. Moving along to Florida. Orson.
Yeah. What do you care to know about my Florida Gators besides the fact that we have an enigma at quarterback? We have the great manager, Chris Leak, who I wrote a piece on him today, echoing and sort of commenting on what Pat Forte had written about in the in ESPN, saying that, you know, Leak has a lot of glossy numbers and he still has that sort of residue of being a blue chipper, but he's never really lived up to the hype. And most of the games that he's won, you can say, boy, we really won it because of him, have been games that most Florida fans don't care to remember anyway. You know, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, these are the kind of games that Chris Leak really comes through in. And in games versus FSU and games versus, you know, LSU, he's been more of a manager and less of an influence, less of a deciding factor in those games. He's not going to win you games, big games. He's just not. He hasn't proved that to this point. You can't say that he will. You can say that he won't lose them for you. That's something he definitely won't do at this point. Urban Meyer's really pressed him to assert himself. This year will be the final chance for him to do that. There's no empirical reason to really say he will at this point, but it is his senior year. It is the only time he's had two years straight under the same offensive coordinator. He's very accurate. He's relatively unflappable if he's not being sat on by D linemen, and which has happened a lot last year. Chris Leak took some ferocious blows in the backfield from people running clear pass blockers who did not know who was coming. So who knows? He's a real enigma. I can tell you this: he's very accurate. He does not take chances that he does not think can cash in to substantial yards. He will always go to the check down guy. He can take a hit, and he can't run all that well.
Yeah. Conventional wisdom, Chris Leak, is if he were in a pro-style system, he'd probably be throwing for another 500 or 1,000 yards a year.
He might, but take this too. This is a weakness that Alabama exposed last year. He's short, and you can bat down his passes at the line. I don't know if they thought he was going to grow. I don't know if they Exactly. Maybe they thought if we just pump another couple of thousand calories and put him in the weight room a day, you know, maybe he'll grow. But last year, a lot of his passes got batted at the line. People saw the tape. I guarantee you, you'll see a lot of defensive linemen with their hands up this year because he's short, and that causes serious problems for intercepting passes at the line off tips. But there is a lot of good news as far as the Florida offense. Every year that Urban Meyer's gone into his system, the stats look like 2005 did for Florida, and then they boomed up the next year. And the system wasn't exactly the same when Alex Smith ran it and when I believe it was Omar Harris at Bowling Green ran it. They were different quarterbacks, and they did tweak the system. So he's got a good track record of that. You saw the offense you saw last year will pretty much be the offense they roll out this year with some tweaks. They've got some tools that now that they didn't have last year, or at least they didn't fully realize. Billy Latsko, the fullback, is a hard-nosed, old-school football player that Urban Meyer loves. He's very similar to the H-backs and the blocking backs that he used in his schemes at Utah and Bowling Green, especially in goal line situations. Plus, they add a physicality that can be lacking when they're not on the field. You know, they pretty much will use them as an offensive lineman, sneak him out of the backfield, occasionally give them carries on, you know, triple option runs in the backfield. Another player who you haven't heard of yet is Cornelius Ingram, who was the third-string quarterback last year and has been converted to a wide receiver slash tight end. They're going to use a lot of hybrid positions coming out. And Cornelius Ingram is just learning the position. I've seen him in practice and in the spring game. He is he's a freak. He's a bell curve freak as far as physical talent goes. The wide receiving core is probably the most exciting bit about the offense. Andre Caldwell is back. He is fast. He actually ran a 4.29. He ran faster than he did. Oh. Yeah, he ran faster than he did before he broke his leg. So I don't know if he breaks his leg this year, it'll go down to a 4.17 next year. I don't want to see that happen, but if it did, you know, hopefully it would go down to a 4.17.
We'll be glad to try out that theory.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure you will. And he did score his only touchdown of the year against you, though, on that reverse, which, you know, a John Chavis defense should know better than that, Joel. Stay in the lane. Then going real quick through the wide receivers, Dallas Baker. Dallas Baker played last year with a punctured lung. He's earned the hallowed spot in Gator fandom for his toughness. Jamal Cornelius is going to continue to come along as an impact receiver. Cornelius Ingram's going to get reps. Tate Casey's going to get reps out of the tight end spot, which they'll split out wide. They'll put it in the backfield. They'll put it wherever. I'm very excited about the possibilities for the wide receiving core. That's not a shortage. Running backs, though, complete mystery. Deshaun Wynn sometimes gets donut fever, gains 15 pounds, loses motivation, and then sometimes he rips off, you know, 60-yard runs against the Miami Hurricanes. There's no telling what's going to happen with them.
That sounds like me, except without the upside.
Yeah. Yeah, and defensively, you should fear Reggie Nelson, because Reggie Nelson is he's alternately a machete, pistol, plague, tiger, feral warrior, complete and total badass of a human being. He is as exciting a defender as has played at the University of Florida in a very long time. The linebackers are superb. Brandon Sadler, Earl Everett are established quantities. Brian Crum is going to be starting at linebacker. Brian Crum is a physical specimen who is jaw-droppingly built. He's one of those guys that came in looking like a freak, and hours in the weight room training have only made him bigger. He's come along in the spring and has played really well. The D-line should be superb. Ray McDonald's back. Marcus Thomas and his belly. Do you know about his belly? It's called Scoop.
No, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, he was injured and he gained weight. He's never lost the belly, but it's become sort of an unofficial team mascot, and everyone sort of rubs it.
That's hilarious. Scoop.
Yeah, exactly. He's a pretty charismatic, funny guy about the whole thing. So he's coming back. Our DBs are a little weak, but we've got a transfer. We've benefited from the kind of sketchy transfer rule the NCAA installed, which allows people to go to graduate school and get a direct transfer if they played at a institution and graduated prior to that. Brian Smith is coming from Utah, or as we call him on the message boards, that guy from Utah. He's come in and is probably going to start, freeing up Reggie Nelson to move into a cornerback in nickel or sometimes playing safety. They haven't really divulged what he's going to be doing yet. Avery Atkins is gone because he hit his baby mama. That's really not cool. Then but in the secondary, we also have Tony Joyner, who's not getting a whole lot of pub, but he is the secondary is a very vocal, hard-hitting group. And finally, you've got we're pretty solid at both the kicker and punting position. Special teams were actually a highlight for the first time. We had a coach who was a special teams coach. That was supposedly his expertise, and we didn't do anything for 3 years. Name redacted. Didn't, because I can't say his name. Name redacted.
I think it's Ron Zook. Ron Zook.
Name redacted, did not do anything on special teams. And then last year, special teams played a crucial role in almost every one of our major victories, especially in the Georgia game and in the bowl game when we got first downs on fake punts and blocked a field goal in the FSU game, which was huge, blocked a field goal in the Tennessee game, which you may remember, Joel.
No, I don't remember that.
Don't remember that? Yeah, name that shall not be spoken of for the year.
Yeah.
But that's I think, as total a picture as I can give for Florida.
All right. Both of your arch nemesis, Georgia. What's up with Georgia? They named Joe Tereshinski the starter recently, so how long is that going to last?
I don't think it's going to last very long. Who's the guy between him and Stafford? Stafford is actually
Joe Cox.
What, third?
Joe Cox is Joe the Cox. Second stringer.
Okay. How close was he to Joe T3? Anybody know?
As far as talent you're talking about, or personally, I mean, they might hang. I don't know if they, have drinks. Yeah, do they sit with the gay seat in between them, or are they close enough friends so that they can just actually sit next to each other? You know.
All right.
Joe Cox was it was pretty close. Read an article today where Rick said he would still be evaluating at this point if it was really his call, but he didn't really feel like he could anymore. Didn't feel like it was fair.
Yeah. Fair. Well, I don't know as much as I should about the Florida team, but if you look at their schedule, their schedule's got to be the best that you can hope for out of the SEC East. They don't play anybody, really. I mean, South Carolina, they do have them, I guess, in the second week. But, they don't play another SEC team until, what, October 7th?
Something like
that. And that's Tennessee. And the West teams that they play are Mississippi State.
They pull Auburn.
Yeah, but I think by that time they can afford to lose one game to Auburn. So,
well, a Georgia fan would disagree, but yes, strategically they probably could at that point. And they do pull us in Jacksonville, which they're in the middle of this very long statistical streak where that's not been a good game for them.
Yep, that's right.
To say the least.
Yep.
But player by player, they're going to be very strong at running back. Down the line,
well, they've got three of the best tailbacks in the country.
They really do.
Three guys that could really start for any school.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. Thomas Brown, I believe, is probably their strongest rusher. Rick has been far more conservative of a play caller at Georgia than anyone really counted on him being. He's leaned a lot on the run, a lot on play action. They haven't really developed their wide receivers like I thought they would under Rick. I thought they would have kind of a string of FSU, like, you know, Peter Warwick's and, you know, LeVar Bowles and all of those other guys from FSU whose names are totally escaping me right now. I'm glad we came so prepared here, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you do?
That's right.
They're going to do what Georgia does. They're going to lean on the run game. Their offensive line, they'll run block pretty well. Sometimes they'll flop in pass blocking, which happens from time to time. They'll be counting on not making mistakes this year a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, too, their two biggest games are going to be Florida and Tennessee. Both of those teams have questionable offensive lines, I believe. I mean, would you agree with that, Orson?
Yes.
As Florida? And I think Georgia has a pretty good defensive line. That Quentin Moses guy?
Yeah, he's not...
Go ahead, what?
Not bad. He's definitely
not bad.
Not
yes.
bad.
Yeah, he's not bad. So they could really cause our offenses trouble.
Yeah, for sure. Although I want to share one story about and Ray Gantt Sr., by the way, is also a beast at tackle. He's tremendous, you know, 6'2", 277. He's large, but they keep in mind their defensive end is 6'2", 275, Charles Johnson. And his nickname is, I believe, Darkness. as in the Rick James skit, as in they call him Darkness.
Wow.
So, yeah. But they've also got they're going to have the same things that Georgia always has. They're going to have a, you know, strong safety, Trey Battle, who's just going to, you know, knock the bejesus out of people and probably play out of position, which is why one of the reasons that, you know, they're so aggressive, but they get burned by teams like West Virginia who force them to play out of position, which is one strength that Florida's always in their offenses, no matter who's pulling the strings, have managed to capitalize on in grand fashion in games against Georgia.
Yep.
Well, they've managed a lot of things against Georgia. Georgia's going to have a pretty strong defense this year. I guess that's kind of a given. Who are they losing, and who's coming back?
They lose Cedric Golston. That's who they lost.
And they didn't they lose that blue guy?
Yep.
And in the secondary?
They did. They lost Will Thompson. They lost Gerald Anderson. They lost Darius Swain and John DiGenova. But considering that Sean DiGenova only had one tackle, let's go ahead and bypass him. I don't think he's going to be a devastating loss to this team. But they return a lot all across the front. They've got seniors and juniors all across the front. Jeff Owens is a sophomore. They've got a pretty deep linebacking core, seniors and juniors, experienced. At cornerback, they got a couple of juniors. So, I mean, this is a very experienced team. Trey Battle's a senior. The free safety, Kellen Johnson, is a junior, so they're going to be savvy on defense.
Yeah, and even where they might be inexperienced, they're probably still good.
Yeah, exactly. Always. They're probably inexperienced, but phenomenally talented.
Yes.
All they should really have to do, as you said, is be careful on offense, and then the rest should take care of itself, correct?
That's a presumption. Joel, what do you think?
I think that's probably pretty safe to say. I mean, especially with Tennessee, we're in no position to critique Georgia right now. Rick owns Fulmer. So, you know, it doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter what they do. They just need to always beat us.
Mm-hmm. I quote Dark Helmet from Spaceballs. The reason that happens is because evil is smart and good is dumb. You should just take that, like, take that back. As a Tennessee fan, you can be like, well, we're good, but we're dumb. And those evil guys, they're really smart. There's a couple of trick games, though. I wouldn't assume that. Joe Tereshinsky, the yanking quarterbacks back and forth, is always trouble. It's always trouble. And Joe Tereshinsky, they're going to have even bigger problems trying to pull him because that is a coach's son right there. And the Tereshinskys are Georgia royalty. And any pulling of those guys, barring, you know, Tereshinsky throwing 7 picks and shooting the finger to the crowd, is going to have some controversy, right? They do also have some really tricky games on the schedule. They have they're at South Carolina. All right, Georgia South Carolina is always a close game, almost always a close game. I won't say always, because somebody will be like, "Don't you remember last year when they beat them 70-3?" And I'll say, "All right, right, right." But I remember once I saw it; it was really close. No, but that's always a tough game. They play Colorado. That's, you know, that is Colorado under Dan Hawkins. That's a really tricky proposition. You might actually, with Colorado's talent, with Dan Hawkins pulling the strings, even in year one, that's not going to be an easy game. And they do play at Auburn. That's a tricky game. And at Mississippi, weird things happen to SEC East teams in Mississippi.
They seem
ask
to.
Ask any Florida fan. So, and they play Georgia Tech. And frankly, there's no predicting Georgia Tech other than they're going to end up 7-5. You just don't know.
Well, but you never know where the 7 or where the 5 is going to be.
Exactly.
They might beat FSU or almost beat FSU one game and then lose to West Scranton Bumble Tech.
Hey, you know, they played their first 3 games this year are Notre Dame, Troy, and I believe, oh, geez, they play some no-name team. But let's just even take those two. Let's take Troy and let's take Notre Dame. I could, in theory, see Georgia Tech beating Notre Dame and losing to Troy. That's how schizophrenic a team they are. So, but point being, Georgia does not have their road is easier than, say, Florida's. It's probably easier than Tennessee's, but I don't think it's easy by any stretch or predictable. It's definitely not predictable.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
All right, moving along. Joel, what are your predictions for the year?
For the SEC?
Yeah, for the SEC East in particular, but also who's going to win the title, too.
Okay, well, I think the easy part is in the West. I think that's going to go to Auburn. It's really between Auburn and LSU, I think. I think LSU is just, they're not returning as many as Auburn, I believe. And their schedule is a little bit tougher, so I think they come out of the West. In the East, I think the big three again, as always, are going to be Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. South Carolina, of course, is in the mix, but I think this year they're still going to be fourth. Due to the schedules, I think that Florida is going to finish in the SEC at maybe 5-3 is what I'm guessing. They could win or lose against Tennessee. I think they lose to LSU and Auburn. And they can win or lose to Georgia. So I think they split between Georgia and Tennessee. So 2 losses in the West and 1 in the East. And Georgia, I think they lose to Auburn. And then they split between Tennessee and Florida. So that's 2 losses for them. I've been sick all day, by the way, and taking medicine, so if I'm wrong on my math, just let me know.
That should give them a 15-3.
Yeah. That's right. This is becoming a lot more complicated when I'm trying to come out of my mouth.
Why did they get past Arsenal, you know, in that game?
There you go. But Tennessee, I think they split between Florida and Georgia and lose to LSU. And that leaves Georgia and Tennessee at 6-2 over Florida at 5-3. So the key game, I think, is Tennessee and Georgia. And I think Georgia wins it.
Huh. All right. Orson?
Okay. Well, those are very exact predictions, and those are very impressive. Mine will perhaps not be as exact, but they'll be more flow-based. How's that? Because I really like the way Tennessee has got things scheduled. They get a great warm-up game at Cal that doesn't really matter regionally. Sure. if they win or lose that game. That's a great game to just sort of, you know, test your ability, see, you know, test your schemes out, see if Ainge has, you know, demonstrates signs of life. I really like the way they scheduled that game. But then they play Air Force, which is a nice sort of, I mean, that's a cake game, but, you know, that's also a pretty interesting scheme. So that, you know, you can see new things. They're going to get a lot, and even California's scheme is going to be new. They're mixing in elements of the spread. They hired one of Northwestern's old coaches to come in and tweak the Tedford offense. Why you'd want to tweak it, I don't know, but good for them. Point being is that they're going to get a lot of tests early on before they face Florida. And then after that, you know, they play at Georgia. They play Alabama. I think they can handle them. South Carolina is going to be a tricky game. They play LSU. But they play a lot of teams out of the West. They're very well positioned to go ahead and take the East. So I think Tennessee is going to go ahead and take the East. And I'm putting it all on Cutcliffe. mostly because I think he is good for a couple of victories this year. He runs, and Joel, go ahead and tell me if this is right, but when you look at Cutcliffe, he runs this very hard to defend offense that somehow manages to be conservative and annoying all at the same time, running like little 5 and 6 yard curls, slants, play action posts, a good dedication to the run game, screens when they hurt most. He's definitely a manager, and he's definitely the kind of guy who's going to exact a lot of detail, and I think that's going to pay off for them.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
I'm not sure he's going to be able to actually win the East, but he is good for a couple of games, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely good for a couple of games. I don't like Georgia, and the only reason I don't like Georgia in the East is the quarterback situation. It's just I don't like the fact that they're probably going to boot Joe T out, and everybody thinks that's cool. I think that's probably going to cause some team tensions. I don't like the game that they play at South Carolina. Would that not be appropriate and to script, to character, Steve Spurrier beat Georgia in week two and just screwed up the rest of their season in the SEC? I think that'd be perfect. That's the kind of thing that should and probably will happen. So I don't like Georgia. I like Tennessee. I think Florida's going to have a really, really – it's hard for me to say, yeah, they're going to lose. But if I see them losing any games, I think they'll lose to LSU. I just think that team doesn't match up well with us. Believe it or not, I think we're going to beat Tennessee. I think we will. I think, Meyer versus Fulmer, that matchup works pretty well. Our defense has always seemed to play well against them, and, as evidenced last year. I know you got Cutcliffe back, but – nonetheless,
all you need to do is have Urban Meyer point at Eric Ainge, and he will just lock up.
I think I'll go ahead and
Give away the team plan, but
yeah, like I'll, a fainting goat.
Yes, exactly.
And then he'll just drop and throw a pass right into the arms of an oncoming defender. which, by the way, just on a side note, Eric Ainge throwing the ball directly to an LSU defender last year may have been the most frightened and discombobulated I've seen a quarterback since Jeff George in the pros. I mean, that was – I don't know if you remember that play, but Eric Ainge throws the ball up from his own end zone right into the hands of a defensive lineman.
No, I don't remember that at all. Not have happened.
That must not have – it's the kind of thing you do in backyard football when the one ex-jock really gets drunk, starts playing, and comes after you in the pocket. You wing it up and throw it to the golden retriever. That's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah, just to top things off, he got his head slammed into the goalpost, dude, just for good measure.
And after that, a car fell out of a cargo plane and just landed on him in the end zone. A freak transit accident. So that's – I think Tennessee comes – in short, I think Tennessee comes out of the East. I think South Carolina is very competitive. I think Georgia probably has a fairly down year. I don't think they're going to have a losing record. But I see Georgia and Florida muddling along with Tennessee probably coming out on top as a competent SEC East champion. Out of the West, it's really hard to bet against Auburn. However, that Auburn-LSU game will determine everything. I think LSU people are actually – whereas I don't think people are making enough of the quarterback controversy at Georgia, they're making too much of the quarterback controversy at LSU. That team played really well last year under nearly impossible circumstances. They return a lot of the same people, and they don't play anyone who can really, pass on them. Auburn's passing game, though, they pass, Al Borges is a West Coast coordinator. He gets a lot of credit as being a passing guru. But in reality, they run a more efficient game than they do an attacking passing game. When LSU faces an attacking passing team like Arizona State, they give up points and yards in bunches. But they don't face anybody like that in the SEC West. So I think they're going to be able – I think LSU's probably going to be able to go ahead and come out of the West, and it'll be LSU-Tennessee. And in that game, sure, why not? LSU wins 24-17. How's that?
I don't like
that's pretty exact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right, fellas, thanks for speaking with me here. I enjoyed this immensely, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
I like that. I had fun.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So just to throw the plugs in here, you can read Orson Swindle at Every Day Should Be Saturday, which naturally enough is everydayshouldbesaturday.com. And you can read Joel Hollingsworth at View from Rocky Top, which is at viewfromrockytop.com. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you know a Georgia band or a hippie with a guitar who would like to have their music featured in a podcast, have them contact us by emailing info@gapodcastnetwork.com or calling 678-389-9441. This way, the ending of the shows won't seem so abrupt.